just after 1 o'clock on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Friday edition of Smith and Jones. And Jonesy, we're going to jump right into it here in a couple of moments as we talk about the National Football League. You heard about it right off the top with Andrew Nye. The false positives coming in one camp, but unfortunately, positives, legit positives coming in another, and that continues to be the theme as we roll forward into week six, just trying to navigate through the waters of who may or may not play. But we've got a good one coming up in roughly 5 or so minutes' time. Solomon Wilcots, former NFLer, will join us to discuss week six and so much more in the National Football League. And then later on this hour, Alvin Williams from Sportsnet, one of our Raptors and NBA analysts, of course, longtime NBAer and longtime Toronto Raptors specifically as well, as we do have news out of the association with the hiring of Ty Lue as the new head coach of the Los Angeles Clippers and an interesting name as his lead assistant joining the coaching ranks for the first time in Chauncey Billups. And this is a guy that we've heard rumored and rumbled as a front office possibility. I think he himself has even talked about wanting to potentially get into management, whether it be as an assistant general manager or as a general manager, maybe as a head coach one day. And certainly now I would assume this is a sign from Chauncey that he's looking at this as a potential stepping stone to something perhaps bigger in his career, as he's kind of gone the broadcast route and now getting into the coaching ranks, and maybe this sort of catapults or propels a new career back into the game in coaching, or again, as I say, potentially in management.
Yeah, I mean, and his name's been bandied about there, Eric, for GM jobs, coaching jobs. Look, he's a former player. He probably wants to stay close to the game, so I can see that. And, you know, he was in a pretty advantageous spot being their TV analyst this year, where you can sit back, watch practice. You don't necessarily have any input into the meetings, but, you kind of get a lay of the land. So, you know, he's going to be in there with Ty Lue. I mean, Ty Lue knows what he's doing. I still don't like the fact that Doc Rivers was given 1 year. Now, there are some people that say that, well, 7 years and they never made it past the first round or the conference finals. I get that, but this is a whole new team. Injuries and all the other stuff played a part in the past. But as back to the whole Chauncey Billups thing, I think that's going to be good. I think you've got, again, a guy who's a former champion, a former finals MVP, has a great understanding of the game, has been coming at it from all angles, former player, broadcaster, broadcast analyst, looking at it as a GM, as a front office guy. I think he can do nothing but help.
You know, it's interesting as well, Jonesy, when we speak about the LA Clippers, and we'll talk to Alvin Williams about this a little bit later on as well. We're hearing rumblings, at least, and this is according to a report that was in The Athletic, that some players like Harrell, Beverly, Williams maybe weren't thrilled about the fact that Kawhi Leonard was given the opportunity to take certain games off to manage his body, and that he was living in San Diego, which then caused him to be late for flights from time to time and whatnot. And then there's talk about whether Leonard ultimately had the ability to tell Doc Rivers or to dictate when he was going to be pulled from games or how often he would be used and whatnot. And these stories filter out. How much of them are fact? How much of them are fiction? How much of them are sort of just inflated a little bit? We didn't really hear a ton of that from Toronto in his one lone season with the Raptors. Now, is that because perhaps he got everything he wanted and he didn't have any reason to doubt this? Maybe he didn't have the option, obviously, of living close by in San Diego and making the commute to Los Angeles or whatever. I don't know. Obviously, that is not an option for him when he's north of the border. But it is interesting that, for the most part, things in Toronto were either kept in-house and didn't get out, or they were kept in check. And he was kept in check, and he was kept happy and content. And for the most part, the players didn't seem to mind or care, and it wasn't an issue. We heard little to zero of this in his 1 year with the Raptors. And now, is this only filtering out, Jonesy, because of the fact that they lost? Would this have been an issue if they won the championship? Again, is this somebody making a big deal out of nothing? Maybe that remains to be seen, but it is interesting that we're starting to hear stuff like this come out. And I wonder how much of that factors into the potential for only one more season left. I mean, that's where the Clippers, and I go back to the story we talked about last week, with all due respect to Lawrence Frank, winning Executive of the Year. You win Executive of the Year for what? For making a terrible trade in the acquisition of Paul George that could hamstring your team for the, you know, short and long term? Because if you end up having Kawhi Leonard and or Paul George walk away at the end of next year, man, it could look real bad if the Clippers don't make a finals, let alone win a finals.
Well, E, to your first point, when you're losing, everybody has the answer. And
yep.
I'm sure that's why that stuff came out. To one of your previous points, we didn't hear about it in Toronto. Maybe it didn't happen in Toronto. I think it was a little bit of both. I think there were probably players that were upset or might have been upset. We didn't hear that, you know, this guy's got another day off and, you know, he's not playing or whatever. But then again, the flip side is, hey, man, that means an opportunity for me. And this is what people fail to realize in Toronto last year. The Raptors had two different systems. I'd even go as far as sometimes to say maybe two different teams. Because when they were 17-5 without Kawhi, when he was in the lineup, they played, and this is the brilliance of, you know, Masai, Bobby, Nick Nurse, you know, the coaching staff, Nate, Adrian, Sergio, you know, John Goodwillie, Jamal McGlory. I'm sure they met and talked about this. There were two teams. One, when you had Kawhi and you played a certain way and you put the ball in his hands and there were certain things you were able to do. And then another team that was okay playing without him. And for the most part, E, that's what we saw this year. A team that moved the ball on offense, was dogged on defense, had great schemes, recovered, helped. I mean, they had two teams. And they've just reverted to the team without Kawhi this year. And when he was out of the lineup, it's like, okay, we don't have him today. We're not going to cry about it or complain or, you know, say, why can't he play? We're just going to go do our thing. And you know, as much as he was the cornerstone in the championship, he didn't win that thing by himself. When we look at the finals, E, Fred was huge. Kyle was huge. As a complimentary piece, Pascal was big. Now, in the early rounds in that Philly series, they needed every bit of Kawhi. In that Milwaukee series, they needed every bit of him. But, you know, it goes without saying, Kawhi needed the Raptors to win his title as much as the Raptors needed Kawhi. It was a two-way thing. So I'm not surprised with all this stuff coming out of Clipperland. And look, the people in Toronto, you got Alex McKechnie, who's been a part of, what, five championships now? He's got a mitt full of rings. He says, look, we're going to manage your body the best way for you. This is what we're doing. And, you know, there comes a point where you and I are parents too, E. You know, you love your kid and whatever, but it comes a point where I'm the parent, you're the kid. And I'm sorry. I'm making this decision for you and for us. And it's for the betterment of all of us. Not for me, not for you. It's for everybody. And, you know, I've referenced it before. There was an interesting series on Netflix about coaches. And that's what coaching is. It's detached concern. What's best for the team? And I have to do my best not to let individual feelings, biases, other priorities influence what's best for the biggest group. And I thought Toronto did it well last year, and that's probably why we didn't hear, as you said, any of it coming out of Toronto.
All right, we're going to talk more about the NBA, the Los Angeles Clippers, the hiring of Ty Lue, and much more later in the show when former Toronto Raptor, longtime NBAer Alvin Williams joins us on the line. But we shift our attention from the NBA to the National Football League, getting set for Week 6. And on the line right now, former NFL defensive back from XM NFL Radio, Pro Football Focus, Solomon Wilcott. Solomon, we appreciate the time today.
Eric and Paul, hey, great to be on with you.
Solomon, I'm going to start with the biggest story, I suppose, in football right now, outside of, unfortunately, positive COVID tests, and we'll get to that maybe in a second. But on the field, and one player specifically in Le'Veon Bell. Listen, Solomon, I'm going to show my cards here and show my allegiance. I'm a Buffalo Bills guy. I'm a little bit surprised on one hand from a football perspective that Bell maybe opted for the Chiefs, but at the same time, if it's purely for a chance to win and a better chance to win a Super Bowl and get that ring that everybody wants and every player wants, then obviously it would seem like the Chiefs make the most sense of the teams that were rumored between KC, Buffalo, and Miami.
Oh, absolutely. And then you have to also be able to leverage the fact that you've got a mind of Andy Reid running an offense and a quarterback like Patrick Mahomes, transcendent player, transcendent coach and quarterback. That usually leads to winning and, you know, proven coach with a great record. And so, yeah, he wanted to be in an offense. He kind of knows what that's about, having been in one once before. You know, I think he wanted the opportunity to return to a situation where the ball is in the air. Ball is distributed to all five eligible players and the running back being one of them. So, I don't think any of us can blame him. You know, the Jets are paying a salary, but yet he gets to pick his team.
Solomon, and you talked about ball distribution, and Eric and I, while by no means football analysts, it doesn't take a lot to see that when you got Patrick Mahomes slinging the ball all over the field and all of a sudden, you know, the field is spread and you can, you know, delay draw or a stretch play or something like that to give the ball to a Le'Veon Bell or hit him on checkdowns out of the backfield or something. Like, what kind of a weapon does he add to an already very potent offense?
Well, when Le'Veon Bell's at his best, I mean, he's a 1,000-yard rusher and going to be close to a 1,000-yard receiving, you know, in a given year. He can produce close to 2,000 yards from scrimmage, if not that, certainly something close to that marker. And he's proven that, you know, that this guy, you know, he's elusive. He forces a lot of missed tackles. You don't have to block everybody. His patience and in and at the line of scrimmage and as a ball carrier has been proven, and the production has been proven. So, you know, listen, you're talking about a Chiefs offense that knows how to put the ball into the end zone, and they've got speed. They are built on speed. And so you add a player like Le'Veon Bell to the mix, I'm telling you, I'm not going to say you have an offense that's unstoppable, but you have the potential to stretch a defense even further.
Speaking with Solomon Wilcutts, Solomon, you know, we were chatting about this yesterday. You think about where the Chiefs were just a couple of years ago when they were forced, in a sense, to kind of reset or at least juke in terms of their backfield with Kareem Hunt, and made a very hard decision, but a very smart decision in terms of off the field and saying, you know what, we're washing our hands of this, and they let him go. And they didn't skip a beat. They go on to win the Super Bowl, and here they are now. The dust settles not even 2 years later, and you're in a position, as you say, to be as stacked potentially as they are. How do you think this changes the backfield of what has already been a pretty decent running game overall for Kansas City, and how the trickle-down effect then impacts the other backs on Kansas City squad?
Well, remember coming in, you know, Damian Williams, he was a guy that played well in the postseason, particularly in the second half of the season. He was the guy that pretty much saved what was a building into a really formidable offense. When Kareem Hunt was there as a league's leading rusher as a rookie in 2017, he was on poised to do it again in 2018. And then when they had to subsequently had to release him, they looked around and here was, you know, Damian Williams, was a guy that had some success. He's played at Miami, had been really good. And then he started to evolve last year into becoming this formidable presence in the backfield, filling a huge void left by Kareem Hunt. And so I think they felt like, you know, we wanted to add another piece. They do so with that first-round pick and Clyde Edwards-Helaire. Then when Damian Williams opted out due to COVID-19 concerns, I think they felt like they're right back where they started off. You know, obviously with Kareem Hunt leaving and maybe one get back, but they never intended for Clyde Edwards-Helaire to be the sole ball carrier in the backfield of his offense. They didn't want to put that on a rookie. But yet when Williams opted out, they had to start Clyde Edwards-Helaire in the first game, and he came out like gangbusters. But remember, they wanted to add Adrian Peterson when he was released from the Washington. team, ended up going to Detroit. So they've been looking for a veteran running back to add to the backfield. And so when they had a chance to get Le'Veon Bell, I was told they were in discussions to make the trade. They decided not to pull the trigger on it. They kind of felt like the Jets would eventually end up releasing him, and that if he cleared the waivers, then it would give them an opportunity to go in and bring him in, and that's exactly what happened.
All right, Solomon. Eric's revealed his hand as a Bills fan. I'm sure he's disappointed his Bills have taken a loss and didn't get Le'Veon Bell, but I'm a Browns fan. Yes, a long-suffering Browns fan who watched Jimmy Brown as a kid with my dad. So that's the explanation right there. People ask me how I became one. That's it right there. Is this team as good as they look right now, and what kind of a test are they going to get against Pittsburgh on Sunday?
I think they're young, right? And I think for me, they're just one of those teams that they've got the names, they're capable of the production, but then it's got to be proven and tested in battle, right? And I think the Pittsburgh Steelers are the perfect team to test them. The last time they were thoroughly tested, the Cleveland Browns, I'm telling you right now, it wilted. And that was week one against the Baltimore Ravens, where they were throttled. Now they've won four in a row. And so now Pittsburgh, I think, poses yet another formidable test to see if Baker Mayfield has come on, to see if, Kevin Stefanski has really quelled the personalities on that football team to help them coalesce together to become, a unit. And that's really, I think, the key, something that Freddie Kitchens failed to be able to get done last year, to get talented players, a lot of ego, to be able to put their own personal goals aside for the betterment of the team. It looks like Kevin Stefanski's done it. I could just tell you that. I'm impressed, but it's yet to be thoroughly tested, and I think the Pittsburgh Steelers will be able to test that on Sunday.
Speaking with Solomon Wilcott, Sirius XM NFL Radio Pro Football Focus, of course, former NFL defensive back as well. Solomon, when we look around at some of the other games, and we focus so much, at least on this show, about the teams that have come out of the gates well, and maybe we'll get back to that in a second. A couple of teams that have struggled thus far as well. I don't know if they can recover their seasons in time, if they can get things righted, but should we be surprised by either one of the 0-5 Atlanta Falcons, the 1-4 Minnesota Vikings?
Sure. I'm more surprised by the Vikings, to be honest with you. This is a team I picked them to win the NFC North division. And Dalvin Cook is playing well. So if you had told me that despite, trading Stephon Diggs, that they're going to get Justin Jefferson, who I love coming out of LSU, they're going to run the ball well early in the season with Dalvin Cook, but yet they're going to be sitting here five games into the schedule and having won once, I would be like, no way that's going to happen. If they can run the football, Kirk Cousins' job gets much easier, and they're going to be much better. Defensively, they're just so well stocked. But no, when you lose a player like Danielle Hunter, I thought that really crippled them, to be honest with you, because he was the cornerstone of this new defense. Then you lose a guy like Anthony Barr. And remember, they were already replacing their secondary with a lot of young corners. And the safeties, who I thought, for my money, was the best safety candidate in the NFL, Anthony Harris and Harrison Smith, they're not playing up to their normal level of expectations at the corners. Are taking some time and having some growing pains and being exploited by opposing teams. You lose your edge rusher, you lose your talented covers linebackers, so the defense isn't quite performing like what we're used to seeing under a Mike Zimmer-led team. Then the offense is just not really clicking on every single level. So it's really surprising to see the Vikings struggling the way that they are.
Solomon, what's been your biggest surprise, and maybe on the other hand, what's been the biggest disappointment of you as we just passed the quarter pole? Like, are there teams that you say, wow, like I didn't didn't think these guys had it in them? Or, I mean, you've talked about Minnesota, how disappointed you are in them, but who's really surprised you going forward?
That's, you know, I think for me, the Eagles and the Cowboys are two teams. Everybody talks about the NFC East being the NFC least. You could not have told me that those two teams would be so inept that they would be that bad. The Eagles have always been this great organization that seems to have their ducks in a row, and they seem to have sort of answered the problems with their wide receiving core that was so bad 1 year ago around Carson Wentz. They still won a division, but they went out and addressed it, and yet they're still bad in that area. And the offensive line is just disintegrated in front of Carson Wentz. And then he subsequently, his game has come down big time. And so that, to me, is shocking. See, they won 3-1. Eagles are as bad as some of the worst teams in the league, maybe a tad bit better than the Jets, okay, but they don't appear to be a playoff team. And then the Cowboys, who we knew they struck gold with CeeDee Lamb. I mean, we knew this offense was going to be a juggernaut. At least I felt it would with Mike McCarthy as their head coach. But I could not have predicted that this defense would be today sitting at the bottom of the league giving up 38 points a game. I mean, you couldn't have told me that they would be averaging over 30 and be one of the most prolific offenses in the NFL, but yet they'd be sitting here with 1 or 2 wins after 5 games. I'm like, there's no way. Cowboys are going to be much better than that. So right there, those two teams are so surprising and shockingly bad. And I don't care what happens with the Cowboys. You can blame it, say Dak Prescott. Dak gets hurt, so now they miss the playoffs. With that defense, giving up that many points, even if Dak was playing, they were not going anywhere. No quarterback can overcome their defense, giving up close to 40 points a game.
Speaking with Solomon Wilcots from SiriusXM NFL Radio, Pro Football Focus, former NFL defensive back as well. Solomon, this is still a marquee matchup. I mean, you look down, and I think it probably would have had a little more lure luster if they were, you know, 4-0 versus 5-0 or 4-1. But the Buccaneers kind of let one slide. Tom Brady maybe forgetting what down it was, and the Bucs have been good, but maybe not great, trying to work out the kinks with a new quarterback and a whole lot of injuries as well. No doubt about that. The 3-2 Bucs, the 4-0 Packers, and Aaron Rodgers, in spite of a bunch of injuries with Green Bay as well, certainly more than keeping this team afloat, undefeated out of the gate. How big is this matchup this week? As much as we talk about the Brownies and the Steelers and everything, I think Rodgers versus Brady has got to be at the forefront of a lot of people's minds.
Well, yeah, I think from a marquee matchup between the two coaches, right, the greatest of all time type quarterbacks in Tom Brady and Aaron Rodgers, the third time they've ever played against each other. You look over the course of the last 20 years, they've only played against one another twice, splitting those two games. Each quarterback has won once. You know, it's a big marquee matchup. Now, at the end of the day, I think Tampa's defense is so much better than what most people think. It's going to be interesting to see how Aaron Rodgers fare against the Buccaneers' defense, because I think they're really good and all the data supports it. And so I just don't know that ultimately it's going to tip the scale and change the landscape of what's happening in the league based on who wins the game. I think Tampa really needs to win it, but I don't know. It looks like right now the road to the Super Bowl in the NFC is going to go through either Seattle or Green Bay. A loss here might sort of tip that a little bit in Seattle's favor. I'm not so sure it tips it in Tampa's favor that they're going to win that many games to be in the running for it. They could be. But so that's the only thing that sort of hangs in the balance. I don't think anyone's playoff hopes are on the line here. I think both teams can still get where they ultimately want to go if they lose this game, because it is so early, right? But other than being the marquee matchup that everyone wants to see, it's sort of like giving some kind of barometer to how much better Aaron Rodgers is now, maybe, or where Brady is at the end of his career. We're going to have fun with that when it's all over. But I think that will be good. but I don't know that it's going to change the fate of either one of these teams as we go through the 2020 season.
Hey, Solomon, what did you make as a former player of the whole? I mean, people were really all over this Brady getting on his offensive line and the fact that he forgot it was fourth down, and if, you know, how can he be chewing guys out when he's making mental mistakes himself? What did you make of that whole situation, or is there too much being made of it in general and it's just, it happens, it's football, time to move on?
No, I think, first of all, those 2 days are two separate issues. Tom Brady was getting on his linemen because what you have to understand within the context of the game, they're going down the field. They're converting third downs into first down. Every time they make a play, that play comes off the board because you got a dead ball personal foul on one of his offensive linemen doing something stupid. And so you got to understand, Tom Brady was reared within a disciplined environment with the Patriots where he played 20 years. Every year, the Patriots are among one of the least penalized teams. Part of winning championships is this thing called discipline. Discipline, or the lack thereof, rears its ugly head when it comes to penalties, particularly dead ball fouls. In other words, unforced errors. We're not even in the middle of the game. The play has stopped, and now someone is doing something stupid because they're more selfish and thinking about themselves and not the team, and they cause themselves a penalty, wiping away the gains that were made on the previous down. Tom Brady's not used to that. In fact, no championship teams are constructed with that kind of selfish mentality. And all the while, all he's ever tried to do, even through a COVID-19 pandemic of working out with players this offseason, trying to teach them how to be champions, getting ready to try to win a championship, and then to see that happening, it had to be very disappointing for him. And he was trying to get the genie back in the bottle at that moment to let these guys know. And, you know, football games are very emotional. So no one's going to come over and say, hey, guys, can you please not get penalties after we – no, it's going to be said in a way that's very emotional. That's going to get people's attention to let people know that we're not – he's not happy about it. Now, when you talk about the fourth down, he should have known. And I think he should have admitted, hey, I forgot. But I'll be honest with you. That's a team problem, which tells you he's landed on a whole different mothership. He's on a whole different island playing in Tampa. And when you're playing for a championship team, you know what the coaches, you know how they have those instruments in their helmet, a communication device, so the coach can communicate to the quarterback. Gone are the days when the quarterback's out there, know-it-all everything, running his own plays in the middle of the game. It's a concerted effort. Within the coach saying, okay, Tom, we got third down here. Okay, we're going to call this play. Remember, you want to look at your high read, but you might want to check down into the flat. And let's not get caught holding the ball here. We can't afford to take a sack because we're already in field goal range. Coaches are talking to quarterbacks all the time, all 32 of them, and there's not one of them where this isn't happening in the pre-snap. So you think a coach could have said, okay, we're in third down here. Okay, we're in fourth down here. Remember, you think that he's in the huddle with 10 other guys. Nobody said it's fourth down. Let's get it. Let's make this work. All right, so we're all going to say it's up to Tom Brady to know what down it is. Okay, he should have known. That's 100%. But there are a lot of people who should have known. And we always say in a huddle, don't keep secrets. Communicate. Tell everybody what's going on. What do you see over there? Where's what I saw? That communication is an ongoing deal. That's not a one person's job to know the down and distance. Receivers have to know the down and distance, don't they? They've got to run around, get past the first down marker. Everybody's got to know the down and distance, not just one player.
Solomon, great insight today. We appreciate this. Have a great weekend. Enjoy week 6. Stay safe and healthy, and we'll talk again soon.
All the best to you guys. Take care. Have a great weekend.
All right, Solomon.
There is Solomon Wilcots, former NFL defensive back with SiriusXM NFL Radio and Pro Football Focus TV as well. Longtime analyst on TV and radio covering the National Football League. And again, his career with the Steelers and the Bengals and Where else did he land as well? I know it was Steelers and Bengals, Vikings, I believe, as well. But we appreciate Solomon's time on the show today. Again, week six kicking off on Sunday. There was no game last night. The Thursday nighter between the Bills and Chiefs moved later because of last week's COVID outbreak with the Tennessee Titans. We're still dealing with that with the Patriots and the Colts and others in the National Football League as we again navigate through the early parts of this season in the NFL. When we come back, we turn our attention over to the NBA, and specifically we'll talk a lot about the Los Angeles Clippers both on and off the floor. Alvin Williams will join us next on Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Welcome back to Smith & Jones on Sportsnet 590. The Fan, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. Thanks again to Solomon and Wilcots for joining us to kick off the show. Week 6 of the National Football League going this weekend. The NBA, well, they're on the sidelines now. For how long? We don't really know. We assume until at least the earlier mid-part of January. We've heard rumblings about February 1st. I've even heard and read some stories that could have the season starting potentially in March. Obviously, it will come down to when it's safest to do so, and when it's safest for fans potentially to be back in the building as well. We'll discuss that and more as we bring on our next guest, but also we want to dig into the situation with the Los Angeles Clippers, both on and off the floor, as we bring in our friend, Sportsnet analyst, Raptors and NBA analyst, of course, longtime Toronto Raptor and former NBAer Alvin Williams. Al, how are you today?
I'm good. How are you guys?
All good, Al.
Good, Al. Good, Al. Al, let's start with the Clippers, and we'll deal with the on-court stuff first. They've got their man in Ty Lue, and interesting, their lead assistant as well, joining the coaching ranks for the first time in Chauncey Billups. Maybe we'll just start with Ty Lue and the decision there to hand the reins over to him, Al. What do you like about Lue as a coach based on what you saw from him as the top man in Cleveland, and how this could maybe transfer or translate to what he hopes to do in LA?
I love his relatability. I feel like he relates to the team, he relates to the players, but he also, from just hearing from other people, he keeps them accountable, whether it was LeBron James all the way down to the last man on a roster. So, you know, when you're looking for that and you're looking forward to win a championship, and I know the Clippers are looking to do that, you know, that's the right type of coach, and that's the right type of personality you want. And Tyronn Lue, he's been an assistant coach for many years. He's been a head coach. He's won a championship. You know, he was the guy, he was the leader of the team who came back from down 3-1 against, you know, the Golden State Warriors. You had the 73-game wins that year. So, you know, he's somebody who's very well accomplished. And once again, he's a great coach in my eyes. So I'm happy to see T. Lue back leading the charge, and, you know, I think it's a good look for the Clippers.
Al, I just said this to Eric. When you're losing, everybody has the answer, and it brings out the worst in people, and everything comes out. And we're hearing these stories now about guys rolling their eyes at Doc and not happy that Kawhi Leonard was getting time off, and the load management, and, you know, if it's true or not, he was late for flights and all of this stuff. Ty Lue's there. He was there. How much of this do you think he needs to address, rectify, or is it just the fact that they've lost and all this is coming out, and had they won, nobody would have said anything?
Yeah, exactly. That's how it is. When you lose, everything gets magnified, you know, and everything hits the door. And, you know, T. Lue, if that's an issue, if that's the situation that was happening, definitely has to be addressed. T. Lue knows firsthand what's going on. He witnessed it this year. And that just, once again, goes to show how hard it is to win a championship and do things like that. If the Raptors could tell you, right? You know, there was a lot of things, I'm sure, that went on behind the scenes with Kawhi as far as every other game and his workouts and stuff like that. But for them to win that championship, everyone else around had to buy in. Everyone else around had to sacrifice and pretty much turn the cheek sometimes when that type of treatment is being given to one player. So, you know, the Clippers, different atmosphere, different type of players on that team, and the leadership was different. So it didn't mesh. And that's where you probably see the shortcoming for the Los Angeles Clippers when it came down to what happened this season.
Speaking with Alvin Williams, Al, when stuff like this happens, when stories like this come out, You've I don't know if you ever uttered these words or not, but you've certainly heard it. When guys say, I don't read the papers, I don't watch TV, I don't listen to the radio, I don't know about any of this stuff. How legit is that? I mean, how much of a, not a concern, because listen, we're not going to be playing basketball or seeing the NBA for at least 3 months, if not four or five or so. So I can't imagine that we're still talking about this or this is still an issue by the time next season rolls around. But are you concerned at all, if you're the Clippers, that this story is out there? Whether the story's true or whether it's untrue, the fact that players are now seeing this and that this is being talked about, does that have any impact on the guys themselves that are between the lines?
I think it's case by case, different individuals. Some people, they don't look at the, they listen to the media and they don't read the papers and they don't do those things. And some people thrive off of those things. So they use that as motivation. If you're a Clippers, of course, you don't want your internal business to hit the streets. And, you know, because you have your reputation, you have how you want your franchise to be perceived. You want those decisions that you've made, you know, to look like they were good decisions and things are handled accordingly. So, of course, as a franchise, you don't want all of those things to get out. But once again, if those are the issues internally, it has to be addressed. And it always starts with the top, you know, from ownership to management to coaching. And then it starts with Kawhi Leonard if those things are true. Once again, if you're truly into winning a championship, you know the role you have to play. You know your responsibilities. And when people are looking for you to be that person, leader on the court, you know, you have to fulfill that role. And if he's not into that, then that's when you have to, as an organization, look in a different direction, I believe.
Al, you know, it's interesting that they would go to Ty Lue when he was on the bench with Doc. Your role as an assistant is to make those suggestions. I know you don't have the final say, but is that all it is? I mean, if these guys have worked together for so long, if Ty Lue really felt that something would work and went to Doc with it, do you not think it would have been implemented, put into place? I mean, I'm trying to figure out the dynamic here of, yeah, you've gotten rid of the head coach and you move the assistant over. And I think that should be done more times than not, because that guy knows the team. He knows the personnel. He knows everything, the ins and outs, the inner workings. And maybe it's just a tweak decision here and there. And I get that. But in a case where the guys are that close, having worked together, is Doc saying, man, maybe I should have listened to him now? Or you know, was Ty Lue not that maybe forceful in pushing things forward when he could have been?
You know, and to be fair, I have no clue what was going on there. But that seems like once you make a decision in agreement with Kawhi Leonard to come to the Clippers, that's something to discuss before the signing even took place. This is how we're going to do it. This is how we're going to manage it. And I think the Raptors set the blueprint. I think, you know, the NBA is full of trends. So you feel like, you know, this was successful for the Raptors. And when, once again, I wasn't privy enough to be in those locker rooms and those meeting offices, but it was a set program for Kawhi Leonard while he played for the Raptors. And I'm sure it probably transferred right over to the Clippers as well. And once you make that agreement, it's hard to go back and try to adjust it. Now you have to realize that's the risk you run when you treat one player. One player has a different set of rules than the other players. Everything is all good when it's all good. And then until it gets bad, that's when things are pinpointed, as we mentioned. And once again, I believe that's something the Clippers had in place. That was an understanding of how Kawhi was going to be treated. And once again, it looks like the other players did not fall in line with that.
Speaking with Alvin Williams. Al, when we talk about Ty Lue, you know, back in charge again, and his lead assistant, lead assistant Chauncey Billups. I know you know Chauncey well. We all know Chauncey a little bit, and he's spoken in the past about wanting to get into management, perhaps, and maybe even being a general manager. That seemed like that was maybe on his radar even more so than coaching. You've done all of it. You've done some coaching. You've worked on the management side. You're on the broadcasting side, much like Chauncey. How difficult is the coaching, the challenge that's involved in kind of checking the ego as a player and joining that coaching fraternity, knowing that you got to put in a lot of work too? You're not just showing up for the games. You got to be doing all the other stuff that goes with it too. And all that said, how good do you think Chauncey can ultimately be, given his basketball acumen in his mind and how successful he can be in this role in life?
Well, I know Chauncey's going to be a great fit and a great piece for that because, first of all, he has the knowledge, he has the understanding. He's a hard worker, and he just has a temperament that everyone will gravitate to. He'll be the guy that can relate to the players. He'll be the guy that can be stern with the players. He has the knowledge. He'll be prepared. He's a successful businessman as well, so he understands preparation. He understands putting the work in. He understands all of these things that these coaches, they have to have in order to be successful. And once again, the work ethic, that's unquestioned because you can look at his career. Of course, it's difficult sometimes for players to make that transition, but Chauncey's been a leader for so long. And I believe, and I've talked to Chauncey a lot. We talk about a lot of things, and we talk about basketball mostly. And just hearing the way he views the game and the way he views and treat people, that's why he's going to be super successful. So I love the fact that Chauncey's, Ty Lue's lead man. I know they have a very, very close relationship, and they're like brothers. I remember playing in Toronto, and Chauncey and I was there. T. Lue used to come up and spend time with us while he was still in Nebraska. So they go way, way back. Chauncey's been a mentor to T. Lue. So it's going to be a great fit. It's going to be a great marriage with those two until Chauncey, gets his opportunity to be the head man of his own organization.
Al, what did you make of the resignation, let's put it in quotes, of Daryl Morey stepping down in Houston? I wonder how much was behind that or, what else went into that. But, no doubt he was a guy that swung for the fences, making deals, radically changing the way he wanted his teams to play, following all the numbers and analytics. It didn't work out for him, and he stepped down. Were you kind of surprised? Did that catch you off guard?
It kind of, just not knowing. And I got to say it again, I don't know him at all. I don't think I've ever even met him. But we've always looked at Houston being the team that, was analytically driven and pretty much one of the forerunners of that, front runners of, just of that analytic space. I know them and Phoenix Suns. And, that's where the game is gone. That's where the game is. But it's still an element of a human element. And I always get frightful or fearful when I always hear about numbers, 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 because the human element has to be held accountable, held into account. And I'm not sure if they had that balance. And that's the one thing that may have, caused him, or other things possibly as well, to step down, because the Rockets, to me, you knew the Rockets to be what they were going to be, and you knew how they were going to play. They had an identity, but it wasn't a formula of success, I don't believe, and I think that's where they are. And now with the roster being the way the roster is, I'm not sure how much movement, how much flexibility they have to even improve from where they are now. So maybe it is the time for him to, take a step down, but he'll have another opportunity because he did set the precedent of the analytic world, and I think people right now definitely believe in that space. And he's one of the top guys in that world.
Hey, Al, we appreciate the time as always, man. Thanks for doing this. Enjoy the weekend, and all the best to you and the family.
Thanks for having me, guys. You too.
All right, Al.
There is Alvin Williams, longtime NBA, of course, longtime Toronto Raptor and analyst for the NBA and the Raptors on Sportsnet. We'll step aside for the break, come back, and tee up Baseball Central and the upcoming weekend. It's Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Back on Smith and Jones, Eric Smith, Paul Jones with you. We're back again on Monday at 1 o'clock Eastern. We've got a couple of minutes left in today's show, and Baseball Central is coming up. We didn't talk a whole lot about Major League Baseball today, Jonesy, but in the last couple of minutes here, all I'm going to say is this. You've got Game 6 going on tonight in the ALCS between the Astros and Rays. First pitch just after 6 o'clock. Then game 5 later on between the Braves and Dodgers. That one just after 9 o'clock Eastern. I don't know if the Dodgers can come back from down 3-1 to the Braves. I'm not overly intrigued by the Braves against anybody, but I pray. I'm not a religious guy, but I'll still pray that it's the Rays. They can't blow this lead, Jonesy. They cannot allow the Astros to come back. I do not want to see Houston in the World Series again. Please, Tampa, just be done with this and knock the Astros out.
Well, I saw Jeff Blair's tweet up Baseball Central yesterday. Is it karma that Jose Altuve's throwing the ball from second base, can't get it to first from short right field? And I said, Chuck Knobloch and Steve Sachs on line one. I mean, maybe this is payback for them, and maybe the baseball gods will let them get close and break their hearts. So, I'm not, once the Jays are out, I wasn't really intrigued at all, but for my dad's sake, I'd love to see the Dodgers make a comeback. And yeah, you're right. The Astros have a title or have some wins. Maybe they shouldn't have. So it'd be nice for the baseball gods to even it out.
All right. By the time we get back on the air on Monday, Jonesy, we may or may not be the unofficial show, at least for 24 hours, of the Cleveland Browns.
Of the Cleveland Browns.
It may happen, folks. Please, please tell me it doesn't happen. We'll talk to you on Monday. Have a great weekend. Thanks for tuning in to Smith and Jones on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.